Mandy is a professional track sprint cyclist. She will talk more about that, I'm sure, throughout the evening. She started to learn to ride the bike at 10 years old. I'm sure she'll correct me if I say anything wrong, I'm sure. She is a 22-time US national champion, which is absolutely amazing. And she's a three-time American record holder. So that is just immense. I struggled to get off the sofa at times, so she's just fantastic. She's a advocate for diabetes. She's a role model. She's ambassador for many organizations, and we'll talk about them sort of things tonight and sort of peer support. And of course, she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 16 years old. So Mandy, how are you? Welcome to the diabetes chat.
Hi Tom. Hi, hello everyone. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for joining.
It's our pleasure, honestly. It's going to be an amazing evening. We've got you hopefully for an hour, but if you need to jump off, of course, that's absolutely fine. But what amazing journey you've been on. And thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing it with us. Have you ever, before, because what we've got me, Morgan, Chris here, and we've got some questions for you. Everyone else can get involved as well through the hashtag or come on and speak. Have you ever had a sort of interview, chat, whatever we're calling this, with so many people with diabetes? Have you ever done that before, or is this a first?
I have done something similar in person.
Okay.
I've given talks, and they were at hospitals.
Yeah.
But it's been a while though since I've done one with other people living with type 1 diabetes, or know someone, you know, with diabetes. And I think that's always a special place, because I feel like I definitely connect with you all a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, love it. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask some questions, and Morgan's going to head up the first round of questions. So I'll head over to Morgan.
Awesome.
Hello, hello. Okay, so kind of just to start out, I'm going to go kind of back to the beginning, and kind of just tell us like about your diagnosis and what that was like, and how it all went down.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Germany. I was born in Mannheim, Germany, moved to Florida when I was 6, and I was really active with swimming and running and playing tennis, and I really wanted to try a triathlon, and the velodrome, which is a fixed gear track bike, was just a safe place for me to ride and not be on the road at such a young age at 10. So my parents would take me to the velodrome, and I was competing, and I really enjoyed it. And I then, as I got a bit older, I was racing more, and just I did some triathlons, but focused on track and road cycling too. And when I was 15, I decided I wanted to move back to Germany, and with the support of my parents. My dad and my mom had actually split, but they were both still really supportive, and my dad went back to Germany. So I shortly went back after to get some really good race experience, some international race experience, because as athletes, it's always good to get, you know, that experience. And that was Europe for cycling. And so it was there that I was riding in 2007, the German Nationals. And one of the events I did was the 500-meter time trial. And it's a sprint event. But I was on the podium. I took bronze. And then I was riding for the state of Germany, Baden-Württemberg. And I was living in Mannheim. And a few months later, there was some VO2 max testing that I did, because I was riding for the state. And at the VO2 max testing, they did blood work, and then I had my bike test and everything. And then after the test, I was, you know, taken aside, and they said, "You have elevated blood sugar levels. We're going to test you again and, you know, wait for your father to come pick you up." And then I went to the hospital, and that was pretty shocking.
So did you like show any symptoms at all? Like there was no indication that you had elevated sugars at all?
No, I personally didn't have any symptoms. Before I went to Germany, shortly before, I had a really bad stomach flu. I remember my mom taking me to the hospital, and they said I had elevated blood sugar levels, but It was just never followed through just because I was an athlete. I didn't, I didn't have any signs that I was really aware of that my parents were aware of. Not even maybe the hospital back then when I was 14 living in Florida, maybe they could have reached out and said, "Hey, how is she feeling? How's she doing?" But I don't know. I don't have any symptoms that I was really aware of, other than later I started to realize, like, oh, I did take forever to warm up, or but I was always thirsty and going to the bathroom like any athlete.
Wow, that's kind of crazy that that's how it, like, you caught it, but wow.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I guess a lot of people probably do show that signs of symptoms, but then obviously there are people that don't. And many people that we've spoken to the last couple of weeks, when they've come on to speak, both guest speakers and everyone else, have kind of said that they have showed some symptoms. So it's interesting to see there's other perspectives of it, isn't it? And so other people who just find out. So yeah, thank you for sharing that, Mandy.
Yeah, thank you. So since, like, you have been diagnosed and you've stayed an athlete, did you ever have any, like, really, like, ups and downs and challenges with it? Any kind of stigmas you had to deal with going into that?
Yeah, most definitely. At the hospital where I spent 2 weeks at, they did all these tests and made sure all my organs were functioning well. And I was meeting with different doctors, and then I met with one of the main doctors who was overseeing everything, and he had told me that I would never be able to compete at a high level in my sport. And so that was really heartbreaking because I was 16 and I was just really starting this career that I thought I could do. And that was just really heartbreaking. So that to me was just finding that community of other people with type 1 was really honestly non-existent when I was there living in Germany. I didn't know any other athletes. I met with an endocrinologist and we worked on, learning how to take insulin and how to check my blood sugar and kind of figure it all out. But it was kind of a lot of like trial and error on my own and getting back on the bike because that's always something that I really enjoyed. And I just was like, okay, I'm going to take one step at a time. But I was also then starting to train again and kind of working through like how I was going to manage my diabetes and also compete and not feel so tired. And just kind of figure out how to stabilize my blood sugars. Also, being when you're nervous, your blood sugars go up. And that was all just new to me. And so, yeah, I just kind of told my dad I made a goal. And I was like, well, I really want to compete at the German Nationals again. We'll see how it goes. So I was diagnosed, ironically, November of 2007, which is Diabetes Awareness Month. And I competed at the German Nationals then. In August that summer, so about a year later from the last time I competed. And through that time, though, I had some denial stages where I didn't take insulin because I didn't take insulin with me to a race because I was embarrassed, or I didn't want people to, or teammates to think like I'm letting them down or that I'm having something that's distracting. I guess I just didn't take my health as a priority. I just knew I was only hurting myself. And I was slowly just getting back on riding and training and competing at nationals that summer of 2008. And I competed in that event and won bronze. So I was standing on the podium in the same place from before I was diagnosed and then with type 1 diabetes. So I knew that I could do it.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's hard, like, especially when you're a teenager and you've started this thing and then now you have this big wrench in the middle of it and you have to figure a way around it. But that's incredible. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not easy. Like when you don't have a lot of people, now there are platforms like this and communities of people and that you can talk to and I race for Team Novo Nordisk, so we're doing really amazing work in the community, sharing our stories, of inspiration.
So how did it feel just going into a little bit when the doctor said you wouldn't compete at sort of high level? How did you take that in? How did your family support you through that? And what kind of spurred you on to go, no, I will. I will be able to compete at a high level. I will get there. What got you through that sort of tricky period, maybe?
Yeah, that was really hard when he told me that. I just remember being really down. Just first even wondering, is he actually serious? You know, and then me thinking, well, are there other people just like me? But I didn't ask him that. But it was just, I knew that exercise was always a big part of my life. And I know diabetes and exercise are still really important, but it's just learning then how to manage it at such a high level again. I didn't know if that would be possible for me. But then with the support of, you know, my parents finding me the right doctors, and then a year later I moved back to Florida and working with a good pediatric endocrinologist and just really logging my food and taking accountability and of, you know, what I'm doing, what I'm eating, how I'm feeling, and just being learning to be more in tune with my body just made me aware, like, okay, I have control of this. Like I can manage it, although there are sometimes outside factors that do come into play, like stress, sleep, you know, time zone changes and all, but I feel like this is something that's manageable, and I've learned to just grow it and grow into that and just let that kind of also be an advantage for myself in ways just mentally that I've been through something so challenging, but I'm still here, and you know, through my career then to be able to have three American records, all the type 1 diabetes, it's really just personally rewarding.
And hopefully Olympic, that's on your next list, I'm sure.
Yes.
Fingers crossed, we'll be all rooting for you. But I think all your achievements today and managing and living with diabetes, that's a massive achievement on itself. But obviously the sort of other achievements that come along with it, they're obviously amazing and all the sort of memories from them. So yeah, brilliant stuff, Mandy. Brilliant stuff. Again, guys, if you want to get involved in tonight's chat, you can come forward and ask questions. You can join in the discussion by asking to speak, or you can join the hashtag diabetes chat, and we can get your questions or thoughts to Mandy, and I'm sure she'll welcome that as well. Back to you, Morgan.
Yeah, so I have a couple more questions, mostly having to do with like the technology that you use to manage. Like, are you on an insulin pump, MDIs, Dexcoms, all that jazz?
Yeah, so I do wear a continuous glucose monitor and I take injections. So racing with Team Novo Nordisk is, if not everybody's familiar, Team Novo Nordisk is a global all diabetes sports team. You know, we're spearheaded by the world's first all diabetes professional cycling team. So we're all living with type 1 diabetes, racing with type 1 diabetes. And yeah, our mission is to inspire, educate, and empower everyone affected by diabetes. And that's been really important too in my career and in managing my diabetes, and to promote also through that an active and healthy lifestyle as we compete with the best in the world. And to me, that's having those tools and those resources to manage my diabetes, to recover as far as nutrition and learning my body, training twice a day, about 6 days a week, nine training sessions. So nutrition, managing my diabetes, sleep, all those things are really factored into what I do. And trying to just stay healthy and keep just going, you know, going better every day. And yeah, there's definitely sometimes setbacks, but just having those tools and resources have been really helpful.
That's a lot. It sounds very tiring, I'm not gonna lie. But more power to you.
Thank you. Yeah, in some ways it is. Like, I wanted to ask something towards the end too, just kind of a medical question. Just not really, it is diabetes related, but not specific on diabetes. But just whenever you get the chance, I'd like to go in and ask that later if anybody has any experience.
Absolutely, anytime. Chris is a walking diabetes encyclopedia, so I'm sure we'll be able to help you with that.
Yeah.
But
Great.
I'm going to hand it off to Tom now with his section of the questions.
Thank you, Morgan. I think already it's a fascinating discussion, Mandy, and you've covered a lot of the sort of points I'd already put down, but maybe just going into a little bit more, going back to the very beginning of your cycling journey, you were 10. What made you get into it? Like, did your dad just get you a bike and you were out on the street? What got you going? What kept you like having that buzz to go, yeah, I love cycling and this is what I want to do? Did you have that ambition, or did you have other ideas of what you want to be when you're older, or as soon as you hit that bike, did you just know?
Well, I was swimming and playing tennis, and when I was around 10, I had an injury in my foot, a stress fracture. I was pretty tall, and I was playing girls who were about 15 years old. And so that was, I guess that was really hard on my body. And as I was still growing and just kind of dealing with that injury at such a young age was really hard. I actually really wanted to be a professional tennis player, but sometimes things aren't meant to be. And it kind of led me to starting to run with my dad, and my mom was taking me to triathlons because I was really interested in that, and I was swimming too for a local club team. I was just really active. My mom would joke and say it's to just keep me out of trouble, but I just really liked that it just kept me busy and just really just organized with like school and things. So, yeah, just kind of having a routine was always great, which I think helped a lot when I then was diagnosed with type 1, because routine has always just been a part of my life. And yeah, just learning how to have that at such a young age, and that ambition with cycling came because I really like triathlons, living in Florida, swimming in the ocean, and it was terrible in the summer doing a triathlon in heat, but it was just really an exciting experience. And also just meeting other athletes who were older, really just taking me under their wing too on group rides or triathlon events. Like, I was kind of one of the younger ones competing with them and competitive with them too. So that was really cool and encouraging. But cycling just, I thought, was just so cool because you got to go really fast, and on the velodrome there were no brakes. So I just thought, I loved how different it was, and it wasn't like your regular ball and stick sports that were, going on in high school. It was just very different.
Yeah, and over the years then, from your sort of younger championship level status to sort of now as a pro cyclist, have you you've gone different sort of ways, haven't you? Did you start on like endurance competing? Is that right? And now you're part of the sort of track sprint, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And could you maybe talk a little bit about that and the difference between them both, and the reason why you're doing the sort of track stuff now?
Yeah. So growing up, I just, I did triathlons and a lot of criteriums and time trials and road races, just because when you're young, you kind of do a little bit of everything, because in
Yeah.
track sprint specifically, it's something you specialize in when you get older. So it's good to have that like aerobic like work that you've done throughout the years to kind of then, as you get older, then focus on that. But it wasn't until I was usually you get about 16, 15, 16 that they identify that sprint potential. But that's why I wonder, if I podiumed next to sprinters in Germany on the podium, why didn't they approach me to focus on the sprints? But I was doing still endurance back then, and I don't know. I'm thinking maybe it's because of my diagnosis that they were just too timid to maybe invest in me, because they maybe thought, oh, I was a problem. I don't know. So yeah, I just didn't feel super supported. So I moved back to Florida and got that support and that help. But yeah, I just think really just having that support system and motivated me to kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. So I lived in Florida, and then I was like, okay, I need to go to college. Like, I'm figuring out where I'm going to go to school. I used to actually come to Pennsylvania for racing when I was younger. So I was like, oh, I could go to Penn State, and I was like, all right, that's what I want to do. So there's a Commonwealth campus is Penn State Lehigh Valley. So you can earn your 4-year degree, and it will be just a Penn, it's a Penn State degree, but you go to Penn State Lehigh Valley. So it's a smaller campus, great classroom, small classroom setting of like 30 students maybe. So it's more interactive and hands-on, and I really enjoyed that part of getting my degree. And it was great because I got to be up here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour north of Philadelphia. And I was then racing here at the track, and also then getting that international experience with other racers coming here. And I always like the shorter events. And then there was a coach out here. His name is Andrew Harris, who's my coach now. He was like, you know, you should come and do some sprint testing. I said, okay, I know a little bit about sprint, but I'm like, so you just ride 200 meters and you're done. Like, to me, that wasn't enough racing, but there was more to the sprints than just riding 200 meters and then it's over. It's like a whole tournament and you're basically racing all day. And so he identified my sprint potential through some testing and said, hey, you might want to give this a shot. Like, your physiological body type and your strength is, you know, is for sprinting. And I was definitely not going up hills. I wasn't really progressing on the track side of things. I was doing well and in ways, but I didn't feel like I was getting any better. But as soon as I switched to sprinting and started spending time in the gym and getting stronger and doing these specific track workouts that were short and explosive, my body just started to adapt, and I found my groove then.
Fantastic stuff, and you've just answered all the questions I'm going to ask you. Fantastic, you just know the answers. Amazing stuff, and balancing like doing the studies and things like that. And are you, correct me if I'm wrong, are you doing a master's as well now, or did I read
Yeah, I'm
that?
just one class at a time. I'm doing it through Penn State World Campus, their Smale College of Business. It's all online. It's a really great program.
Yeah, absolutely incredible stuff. And like we talked about before, like you're sort of scheduling, like you're so active, you work out 6 days a week, and you do double sessions, and then doing all these extra things like your studies, and then getting the time to come on and chat with us guys. It's just so fantastic. So thank you so much. You mentioned Andrew there, who's part of your team, and also Lynn's on, who's your PR manager, who's fantastic. Is this your team? Have you got other people that support you or have supported you over the years? Have you got a small team, a big team, or how do they support you in the management of your sort of professional career as a cyclist, but also to support you with your diabetes? Do they help you that, or are you quite independent and they allow you to manage it yourself, but they'll obviously step in and help where need be?
Yeah, so definitely. I'm really happy Lynn is able to be here. She's been amazing to work with over the last couple of years. It's so hard to be an athlete and do like the social media and get things like working and connected and all these things. It's just she definitely has helped streamline that process and help share my story, and she's a big part of my team, and excited for the work that we have been doing together and excited for everything that we have coming up that we are going to be doing. So it's just helped relieve a lot of that. And it definitely helps a lot too with my diabetes and minimizing that stress. Because I definitely want to be, you know, part and give back to where I can. Just as an athlete, it's yes, I'm focusing on my sport, but if I do have some energy here and there, I would like to also recover, but also give back where I can. And that's really
Cool. Yeah.
important too, and having that sense of community, because I know I didn't have that when I was diagnosed. So if that helps, you know, one person, then to me that's, you know, that's that means a lot. But my coach, Andrew Harris, we've worked together for about 8 years now, and he understands my type one. He's even at races asked me what my blood sugar was, or he understands what the numbers mean. And I'm really glad that he understands and he knows. And
Do
he's
you
never
connect
questioned.
with other, do you connect with other people, so like dietitians or any other professional medical like doctors or consultants, or just your general sort of diabetes appointments? Do you have any sort of day-to-day or weekly connections with other people, or is this your sort of team that you're with pretty much 24/7?
Yeah, so I do work with an endocrinologist on Team Novo Nordisk. She looks over my glucose data and gives me good feedback. Also, just I have a great connection here at in my local community with St. Luke's University Health Network. It's a local hospital, and I'm an ambassador for them. So it's really great to be able to be connected with them and have access to all the great resources and share my story with pediatrics and younger kids too. But they have helped me tremendously with just getting appointments and making sure like my health is all good and that support is truly there. And they have a fantastic support team and just my family too, my parents, my fiance. It's definitely it feels good to have a good community just always there when I need help and support.
Amazing stuff. So what about your sort of going into your becoming a pro cyclist? When did that happen? And you talked about being part of the team Novo Nordisk. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about that? Obviously, it's the first all diabetes professional cycling team, but maybe I'm sure you'll do wonders in forming us better than I am. But yeah, could you maybe tell us a little bit about when you become pro and being part of the team?
So when I was 16, I had that diagnosis and I kind of got everything back in order in my life. I said, well, I'm like, what's next? All right. It's like, so I definitely wanted to find a community and be a part of a team that understood diabetes too, that didn't make me feel like any less or that I wasn't good enough. And so, there was a rider that I was friends with that was living in Florida and she was racing for the team before we were called Team Type 1. And so it was a mix of people with type 1 diabetes and then who didn't have diabetes. And it was started by Phil Sutherland. He's the co-founder and CEO of the team.
Yeah.
And he came together to create Team Novo Nordisk based on a shared vision to inspire, educate, and empower people. And that's exactly with his support and growing the team. It was before he was doing Race Across America and some were mountain biking. It was a very driven team of people that were all there to support and help each other. And to me, that gave me hope to say, okay, I can do this. We started going to schools and sharing our stories. And that was really overwhelming because it was all like an open wound. Like talking about it was really hard. I remember just like sometimes crying or like having to go to the bathroom and just like I needed some time because it was just all really hard to talk about. But as my teammates started talking about it and I started to get more confident with my owning, my diabetes, I started to feel like that was important to me and my goals. And with going to school, it gave me that independency of like racing collegiate cycling and, living at 18 on my own already and having that independent life of taking care of my diabetes and then meeting Andrew and I wasn't really progressing on the endurance side where I then switched to sprint and I then was like, okay, I could definitely, I want to compete for the national team. In 2014, I was like, after I graduated from my undergrad with my bachelor's, I was like, all right, I want to focus on going, for the national team and being a professional athlete. And so about 2 years later, in 2016, I then made the national team officially. I was racing for the national team for a bit. Not, I wasn't part of the national team, but I was racing for them. They were giving me opportunities to race World Cups and Pan Ams. And it was 2016 was when I then made it on the national team through then more international results that I started to get. And it was just building into that whole process of racing and competing internationally.
And do you connect with other fellow cyclists within Team Novo Nordisk? Like I know I've seen Sam Brand. Do you connect with other people? Do you have like a WhatsApp group, or do you meet on occasions, or like when you're doing competitions or not? Do you see a lot of these guys?
I've talked to Sam and Becky. She is an ambassador of our team. So is McKenna McKee, a young 18-year-old who's an ambassador for the team as well. Her goal is to be on the professional team. But Yeah, so I stay connected with a few of them. There's actually a lot of new riders that have come in, and I haven't gone to a team camp in a couple of years. Also, since the pandemic, it was hard, but also my racing schedule conflicts with their racing schedule for the pro men. They do the UCI World Pro Tour, so like when they have training camps, I'm actually racing at a World Cup or World Championship. Like I'm not able to go, so that's been really hard. But hopefully later this year, I'll be able to see and be together with the team in over maybe 4 or 5 years. I know that's a lot, but yeah, when we have different racing schedules, it's hard. But the team has
Yeah,
definitely supported me from afar. But I'd love to be able to meet some of the new riders on the team, and being the only professional female on the team, it would just it's just it's hard not to be there amongst with everybody. But yeah, I hope to meet them later.
how many is part of the team, do you know?
It's growing. They have the men's pro team, which I think is about 20 to 25 riders, and then they have the development team. So they also have a talent ID camp. So then through that, there's a pipeline. They have the talent ID camp, the men's development team, and then the UCI World Pro Tour team. So it's a good streamline for them, and they get to work with the team doctors too, and learn how to manage their diabetes and compete. And so I know that takes a lot on the endurance side too. So
Brilliant stuff. I wonder in the future as well if they ever connect with the sort of younger generations as well to sort of influence them and help them to move up the sort of cycle to get to the top. If so, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
yeah, I mean, if some of the riders, if they're in town or wherever the camp is, they might intertwine with the development camp. They've done that before, of the talent ID camp. So they're all amongst each other at certain points, whether it's for multiple training camps that they have throughout the year. So they definitely do a good job with integrating that and staying connected, through like social media and just sharing those raw stories of everybody on the team.
Awesome stuff. Obviously, diabetes has not stopped your sort of determination and to fulfill such an active and physical lifestyle. You're just amazing. And how have you managed your diabetes with such active lifestyle, like traveling a lot, training a lot, long sessions? How's it gone over the years? Like, are you in a good place at the minute? Like you said before, you had that sort of burnout period, I guess. But how's it been? Is it tough at times?
It's definitely challenging. It can be just because it's something that you think about all the time. But, once I'm in a routine of racing, it's no problem. It's just with the pandemic the last 2 years, not having any racing and then going to race, there's a lot of nerves that just build up, and there's, your own performance expectations. So your body just sometimes like gets the best of you, and you're nervous, and I'm trying to control my emotions, but my blood sugars are great at one time, one moment, then I go and race for 10 seconds, I come back in and they're like multiple times higher, and I'm like, I'm so nervous. But that's the hard part, is just that consistency with racing. So I'm hoping to get that back this year. And so once that happens, my body's just used to that stress, and I want to have that again, that routine of racing.
Of course. You check your levels quite often then. So, say it's a training session or a competing event, do you check your levels quite often, like every half an hour or between each race? Like, what's your sort of strategy with that?
I have a continuous glucose monitor. So, say if
Okay.
I'm on the road on my road bike, I'll just swipe and look at my phone occasionally, and I'll eat a little bit too on my ride. But on the track, specifically when I do more sprint training or I'm in the gym, I train about 6 hours total, but I'm not riding or lifting that entire time. There's definitely like breaks. So I'll sprint for maybe 10 to 40 seconds and then rest for 20 minutes, just to I'm trying to get maximal, just everything ma is maximal. So then I recover fully, and then I'm doing like a max effort again. So to me, it's important that my blood sugars are stable so I can recover well. And if they're not, then then I'm not recovering as well too. So to me, it's just what I do in training is kind of what I do in racing. I try, but then the nerves just sometimes get the best of you, and just doing what I can with nutrition and and figuring out what foods, make me feel good and what don't. I just, I stay away from those or eat those foods that do. And I know certain foods that impact my blood sugar around heavy training. So yeah, definitely it's always still trial and error. It's harder too when you travel though with time zone changes, because then your insulin regimen changes and then you don't really have a lot of options at a race hotel of like what to eat.
And
So
do you manage this yourself, or do you have other people that can work with you to work out solutions?
I mainly do it by myself, but I also have as a resource the team endocrinologist who helps give some feedback here and there. But see, Sprint is so specific that there isn't enough data and resources there really yet with Sprint. Like just Sprint, not just Sprint cycling, but Sprint specifically, like power-based sports and diabetes.
Brilliant stuff. Before we head over to Chris, because I'm sure he's eager to get some questions in. Hypos. Do you have many hypos? How do you treat it? What's your go-to hypo treatment? Is it like juice? Do you like jelly babies, them sort of things? And how does it affect you when you do have a hypo? Depending, I guess, the severity of the hypo, of course. But do you then take some time out, and especially if it's say in a competing environment, do you have to step away then from a race, or have you had that experience before? Or them sort of questions around hypos.
Yeah, so when I'm racing more throughout the day, say I'm at the track for a morning qualifying session for a couple hours, and then I have to race in the evening again. I'm under a lot of stress too with just the weather as well. There's those variables if it's really hot too. I need to drink more water, but also then my blood sugar tends to run higher, and I'm giving myself little bits of insulin here and there. But it's not until after racing that I'm home, maybe in bed or at night, like sleeping, I wake up with my glucose monitor beeping, reminding me that I have all this insulin on board. Or I try to eat a snack in order to make sure that I don't go low because I know I have all this insulin on board. That's what makes it hard when I'm racing sometimes under those circumstances. But other than that, thankfully, in training, and just usually, I don't typically go super low. Thankfully. There are times before a race, I mean, I didn't get dangerously low, but I got a little bit low, but I just made sure to eat some of my Honey Stinger. It's a really great sponsor of mine, so I love all their nutritional supplements and foods and stuff. So they do a really great job with everything, and I know exactly what works for me. So if I have a couple of chews and I know when I come back in, I'll feel better. Just personally, like I just know how many carbohydrates I need. But yeah, I know the race won't stop for me unless, okay, if it was really bad, then I would say, sorry, I can't start this race. But I've never had that happen to me. But
No,
there are times where I know I was going low and I was like, oh man, like I'm
I guess
still
you're
going up
checking.
the race.
Yeah, I guess you're checking before your races, aren't you? So you're seeing the trend, you know where you are, and in most cases, you're probably nowhere near that hypo stage. So yeah, interestingly about the sort of the effect later on when you're at home, when your body's kind of relaxing or shutting down, sort of thing. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. Before we go to Chris. Matt on the hashtag, thanks Mandy. You and all involved in TNN are such an inspiration to everyone who's associated to Type 1s, especially those of us who ride bikes. So Matt's a keen cyclist himself. Do you think Team Nova Norvis will ever have a women's pro row team?
Ooh, yes, I want to see it happen. Maybe after, hopefully around the time of my career right now, or even after, it would be something definitely like that could I would love to help build. Unfortunately, there are, in a good way, there are not many Type 1 female cyclists, but in another way, there it'd be great to have teammates, female teammates, maybe on the roadside or. But yeah, right now we have McKenna McKee, who's an 18-year-old Team Novo Nordisk ambassador, who is trying to make the professional team too. So yeah, and that's I see that happening in a couple of years. I think once she also starts, getting more integrated with national titles and racing and international racing experience. There's kind of a, like a streamline. And she went to the Talent ID camp when she was younger, but I definitely hope to see it happen, and I hope to be a part of that or some type of women's type one cycling initiative at some point.
Amazing stuff. Great question, Matt. And fingers crossed that that comes to fruition. Absolutely. Go on, Chris. Get in there, my friend.
I feel like I'm kind of being set up here with the guest, Mandy. It's great to talk to you, but I'll be honest, the machine that I'm most comfortable using in the gym is the vending machine.
I like that one. I walk past it, but.
sort of along those lines, I mean, do you have other things other than cycling and working on the sprints and stuff? Do you have other things that you do in the gym to help develop the musculature for the sprinting? And sort of tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I love the gym. I think it's so much fun. It's a good, I wouldn't say distraction, because sprint training is a lot of fun, but it just kind of mixes up training. And I focus right now 3 days a week, and there's a hypertrophy phase. So I'll do, depends, 85%, 95%. So I'm in those like 4 week blocks, and it's a 16 week block total. So I have to stay really consistent each week in order to like go through the base build, deload, peak, and then I start like a whole new cycle. So like that's where the routine comes in, and having like a really good structure with my coach. So Andrew Harris, he writes my gym and my cycling track program. And so I'm with him and the team Edge Cycling. That's his team. So I race for Team Novo Nordisk, but then I train amongst Edge Cycling. So that's his track team. And yeah, it's great to be able to work out 3 days a week and do squats, and I do a lot of trap bar jumps, like explosive work, and also leg press is a big aspect of it. Bulgarian and split squat. I think that's a bit of a tongue twister. That's the single leg split squat basically. So it's just you're developing then a single leg work, because we're constantly just turning left on the track, so you get some imbalances. So it's good to have that as well, and RDL and a lot of those accessory exercises. I really like front squat too. So all those just build like a really good foundation for us as sprinters, because then we're able to put out power on the bike. And then for us, it's also power to weight ratio. So even though we don't have a weight class, it's really important too during parts of the year that we're in good like prime shape. Like during, there's no really off season, but when I spend a lot of time in the gym and in a hypertrophy phase where I'm doing a lot of volume, it's okay to be maybe a couple pounds more, just so I'm also preventing some injuries and in that time period also building muscle mass, like healthy. So
So you've got a sort of a cycle that you're doing of the various muscle building and anaerobic stuff, and then do you also have regular running, walking, distance cycling stuff that we might think more of as traditional aerobic activities as well?
yeah, so mostly I focus on anaerobic, but aerobic I'll do a couple times a week. So Wednesday and Saturdays, well, in the summer, more or less Saturdays, but right now it's really sprint specific. But I'll do an hour road ride to the coffee shop, or just kind of use it as recovery, because lifting 3 days a week and having double sessions is a lot. So usually we just use the road right now, the road bike, for just recovery.
And do you notice big differences in how it affects your blood sugars and your insulin needs when you're doing the aerobic versus anaerobic?
Yes, I definitely noticed that I'll have to eat a few more honey stingers on my ride. And also just to be more mindful too, like having a little bit of a higher blood sugar when I start. Definitely noticed that. But also when I've taken like a month off, which I haven't done in years, but it happened in November, just a mental and physical reset after being a Olympic long team member. I was one of two athletes that for Tokyo, so I was on the Olympic long team, and so I didn't get to travel to Tokyo. I wasn't selected for the final team, but I just needed like a mental physical reset. So November was that time I took off, and I remember Yeah, that was a little hard, like getting back into training. I was definitely running more low after that month off. But I was doing other things like running. I got really good running shoes, but I don't like running because you're just different muscles from cycling. So it was definitely like really hard. But I was doing like Pilates and like other just things to stay active and get my mind off of it. But yeah, it was just that was difficult to get back into training then in December, and my blood sugars were definitely running lower. So I think once you find a good routine and your body's adapting to that, that's like road cycling, like for many hours or for a lot amount of time is not really a big part of my training. So definitely that new variable is going to shock my system.
Do you ever talk with the other people on the team that do the sort of road races? I mean, in my mind, when I think of cycling, the thing that comes to mind is the Tour de France. I don't think of really the sort of sprint stuff, although I knew in my mind that it was there. But do you guys ever compare notes and talk about how you need to vary if say one of the distance cyclers is doing going to do some sprints for some reason, or vice versa? Do you guys help each other out with that?
To be honest, it's really specific. Like track sprint cycling is very specific. My training is very different from their type of training. Their sprinting on the road is like they already have ridden 2, 3 hours and maybe do some 20 seconds off, 40 seconds on kind of thing, where I'm like full on 40 seconds and then I take 20 minutes. Like we just have more lactic acid that we develop. So we're recovering and doing the effort 20 minutes later. That's they joke in a way, not them specifically, but endurance riders, as like sprinters are lazy, but really they're just like we are like going in maximal efforts to the point where sometimes you feel so nauseous that you may throw up, but your body's just going like full throttle for a certain amount of, like it's hard to teach your body how to do that at first. Like I remember some endurance riders doing efforts with us from our training group here, and they would kind of give maybe 80%, but I'm like, that I would be like, that's not your 100%, is it? They're like, well, no. I'm like, well, you got to do 100%. So I feel like everybody's like rate of being able, like perception of what they're able to give. So it's just harder for an endurance rider, because I in the beginning I struggled with being able to go 100%. So we just have different types of training. Like I wouldn't ride for 2, 3, 4 hours. We're just very different physiology, just everything's so different that there's not too much to kind of compare. That's why there is not a lot of research and data behind sprint explosive athletes who do sports. There hasn't been too much.
Well, that seems like a big gap in our understanding of sort of the underlying stuff that's going on there.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting to see and hear what more power athletes and sprinters, not just cycling, but how that affects them. I spoke to one runner though from Chile that the team connected me with, and she's a sprinter in track and field, and she says, you know, taking insulin after, even though her blood sugars were good, kind of helped clear out some of the lactic acid, so it prevented her from going high in that way. So, which was interesting. It's like sometimes later after training, a hard training session, my blood sugar will go up. So it's like already giving myself insulin, you know, has helped me in that way to prevent like going high so then I can actually recover. So like little things like that, but there hasn't, you know, it's kind of trial and error what works for you.
Well, that's all we all do, right? Is trial and error and see what works, and we figure it out.
Correct. Yeah.
What do you do when you're not cycling or training or doing that other stuff? Do you have things you like to do to relax, hobbies?
That's kind of hard because I'm in school, and so I'm taking one class at a time, and everything's online through World Campus. But yeah, I have four animals, so they keep me really busy, and I live with my fiance, so there's always something to do around the house. And if I'm not training, then there's a grocery shop Yeah, it's kind of hard to say I have other hobbies. I mean, I like cleaning and organizing and just making sure I have also downtime for myself. Just to stay connected and happy with like my family is really important, so.
Awesome. With regard to sort of diet, what do you eat to fuel? Do you on days that you know you're going to be competing, do you change your diet to try to accommodate things, keep insulin levels either higher or lower to interact with how that what you're going to see from the exercise, or how does all that work?
Yeah, well, through the years, like I found foods that work for me. Like I try to incorporate more protein. I definitely still eat carbs because you need all that for everything to be absorbed and to have energy. So, but protein for me has definitely helped with recovery and just having a little bit more chicken than say some rice and like more vegetables. And I've also found just through my own research, and I don't know if you've heard of this account, Glucose Goddess. But she talks about too of the order in what you eat your food. So you eat your vegetables, then you eat your protein, and then your starches last. It kind of lines your stomach better if you eat vegetables first and kind of go in that order. And I found that too with my blood sugars. I would want to go right into like my carb first, but no, I start with vegetables first because I've noticed too my blood sugars have definitely gotten better in that way too. So just like little things like that I found. That
I'll be
work.
trying out now.
Glucose Goddess on Instagram. It's so interesting. She puts up glucose graphs. She's not type one, but she's pretty actually getting popular in the UK. She's been on, I think, the Daily Times. But she's just talking about glucose awareness. So everybody who doesn't have diabetes, foods and other factors also affect their blood sugars, but just not as drastically as people with type one. So yeah, just that was interesting to me. So just incorporating more protein, and what I do on training is just what I try to do on race day, except it is a lot harder when I travel, and so half of my food that I pack is my suitcase. Like it gets a little heavy, but I always try to be overly prepared as well.
That was actually one of the questions on my list was how you plan out your meals when you've got all of this stuff going on, and especially if you're traveling to do a competition. Do you get stuck eating out, or do you pack everything with you and bring it all and just do your normal routine, or how does that work?
Well, we have a race hotel, so I'll sometimes ask our team manager, I'm like, hey, is it okay to like get chicken but have it without any sauce? Because like I don't know how much sodium it has or extra sugar, or like I don't that to me is like something that would just cause like an extra headache, especially when I'm trying to recover and keep my blood sugar stable. I'll just eat plain chicken, or just things plain like without sauce, because that always just affects me a bit more, maybe the sodium too. Like I'll get my electrolytes other ways, but yeah, I just try to ask for things that are just more plain. Of course, there's that thought of like, oh, I don't want to seem high maintenance, but like this is just better also because I have thyroid and psoriasis, which comes with those having an autoimmune condition. So just to minimize like the stress that I'm putting my body under, and if I can do that and help it with food, then that's kind of what I try to do.
So it doesn't sound like you eat super low carb, but you do sort of kind of minimize them, I guess, or eat as just the minimum that you need to keep
Correct.
going. Is that
Yeah.
and I assume you do actually count the carbs?
I have an idea. I look, I I'll, like I'm not asking them specifically, but I look and say, okay, like, if I eat potatoes or rice, like I know what how my body reacts to that. Plus, I've like competed, or I've raced or trained all day. I might not need as much insulin too at times, so I kind of have to factor that in. And if I can also feel like if I'm under a lot of stress, I might need more insulin. It's kind of just like a feel too, and knowing what I'm eating and where my blood sugar is starting at. Like I just, like. When you're hungry and you want to snack on stuff, like I've snacked on pretzels and then my blood sugar goes really high. And then I'm like suffering with that. So it's better to like that I eat a meal and then have like my treat or something that I want towards the end, because I'm not gonna pay for it as like difficult, you know, it's difficult towards the end, say when I want a snack. It's better to do it at the end of my meal if I still want it. So I guess I've just kind of learned what works.
That's actually fascinating. And at some point, I may actually even ask you to contribute some data for a study. I'm thinking about designing a study to look at how people do carb bolusing and see if we can improve that. Sort of the whole thesis of the thing is that people figure out what works for them, and then we just need to actually quantify it and figure out what's going on sort of underneath. So yeah, that would be fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. Thank you for all that you're doing too, and bringing more awareness and research into this. And I think having those discussions is really important.
Oh, well, that actually sort of all grew out of just me being irritated that, you know, I saw that something was happening that nobody could explain. And so I decided to try to figure out how to explain it.
Yeah, which has me with my question. Do you know a lot with diabetes and gastroparesis? Have you heard of that?
Gastroparesis.
Paresis. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Do you know much about it?
I do know a fair about it. I probably actually have some very, very mild gastroparesis, although not enough to warrant any sort of a diagnosis or treatment or anything. But I know a number of people, including at least one endocrinologist who lives with type 1 themselves, who has gastroparesis as well. Okay. It can be extremely difficult to manage. Just because, you know, if you take insulin and the food doesn't start digesting, obviously you're going to tank.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of figuring out some health stuff, and that's kind of one of them that they want to do a study on later this week, where I eat the food and then they see how it digests in 4 hours. Because I've had some really odd abdominal pains and I just like would feel nauseous. I don't know if that's also like COVID related. Like I got COVID a month ago and I don't know if that triggered something or flared something up for me. You know, like it was a weakness in the body. So it was something that I've always kind of dealt with, but I don't know if that like triggered something. So
It very well may have. They're actually talking about the current strain of COVID that's circulating, targeting the gut more than the respiratory system. So
interesting.
That would line up.
Yeah, so I have that later this week, the gastric
the emptying study.
Yes, that one. So that's what I'm doing.
You get to eat radioactive eggs.
Yeah, I have to eat that, the sandwich. So look at to see how it digests. Yeah, it's just been odd. So I've just had some stomach pain, some lethargic kind of feeling, just weird nausea, being nauseous and just some other stuff. So I'm just trying to figure it out. It's kind of hard when you're like trying to be a fine-tuned machine.
Definitely. Although it also sort of just brings to the front the idea that, you know, especially when you live with diabetes, you're so in tune with your body that you can pick up little stuff that happens whenever there's a change. It might not be something that somebody else would even notice. And yet you're going, oh, if I eat that, I feel a little bit weird afterwards. Maybe something's going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like the last few days I've been eating foods and they've like, I don't feel like they're digesting right. So it's been odd.
Well, good luck. I can't really say good luck with the study, but
no, I hope it goes well. Like I hope like we just get some answers, but I appreciate that. Thanks for answering, just because you're talking a lot about diabetes and you have a lot of experience with it and the just discussions, and so I thought it's a health issue in a way I wanted to talk about.
Most definitely. If I would make a recommendation, the organization that I mentioned sort of at the beginning of the show or the chat, Steve Edelman, he's used to be the head of the Endocrine Fellowship Program at UC San Diego. He founded the organization Taking Control of Your Diabetes. He's been living with diabetes since he was 15, but he has gastroparesis and he's talked about it publicly in a number of a number of forums over the years and even discussed some of his experiences with it. So yeah. It might be worth, you know, a quick Google, check it out, browse through their sort of video vault that they have and see if there's any good discussions in there that he's done, because obviously he's got personal experience, but he's also, being an endocrinologist, can tie it in with the diabetes and how it affects management and all that other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually know Steve. I don't have his contact right now, but Phil Sutherland, the CEO of our team, he knows Steve very well. He used to come to camps and some training camps and stuff back in the day when I was at training camps earlier in 2010. But yeah, I'll reach out directly to him, see if I can get connected through the team again and start that conversation. So yeah, I didn't know he was living with that. So interesting. Thank you.
Of course.
It's fascinating, guys. Absolutely loving it. Mandy, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I'm not sure if you're happy to stay a little bit more. It's entirely up to you. We've got a few guys that have come on to speak, and Flipper on the hashtag says as well, does Mandy know of any type 1 pro cyclists who don't ride for Team Novo Nordisk?
A few that used to ride professionally, who are maybe ambassadors or part of other organizations. So, am I missing somebody? I don't want to miss anybody.
Yeah. That's absolutely fine. Richard, you got your hand up there, mate. Did you want to ask a question to Mandy?
Yeah, thanks for allowing me to ask a question. Basically, my question is, I do a lot of duathlons, and I did one last year, and I found that basically after the run, I started to run around about 14, and I dropped to about 6, which is fairly normal when I go for a run. And in the transition, I did a 44K bike ride. When I finished the bike ride, literally my levels went up to about 20 after the transition, and I think it's because, you know, you get a chance to recuperate before you go for the run, and I couldn't work out what to do because I didn't really want to injure. On how to deal with the transitions in respect of your blood levels going up.
I'm sorry, you broke out a little bit, so I missed the last part of
your... Yeah, so the issue I had was that in the transitions, after the transition to go into the running section, I found my levels went really spiked up after the bike ride, and I couldn't bring those levels back down again. And when I did the final run, I literally had no energy because there was no power coming from my legs. I just had no energy in my legs in the final run. And I don't know why. I don't know how to deal with the blood levels going so high after the cycle.
Yeah. Well, I am not with you, and I'm not able to. You know, you're able to also like see what you're eating and how that impacts you and your training. Like I say, what I do the day before, 2 days before, makes an impact on race day. So personally, maybe just like looking and seeing like what are those things that you're doing a day or two before you're having that hard training session or that competition, you know, you're competing, keeping like a log of that so you can see what worked and what didn't. You know, sometimes I know when I go without food for a while and I race and I like eat a gel or eat something, that's why incorporating more protein, like sipping on a protein shake or, has really helped me too. So when I do eat something, I don't go super high.
Yeah, do you know, I've done 3 marathons. I've done them all fasted. And someone said to me when I went for a bike ride yesterday, he said, you know, have you tried having protein before you go for the ride, like vegetables and protein, like chicken, right, rather than carbs? Because I'm always scared about going for a long cycle ride with insulin on board. So that's the main reason why I don't tend to eat before running, doing a long run or doing a long cycle. But yeah, I think
You might want to consider trying it just through some trial and error and like keeping your own little logbook just so you can see, okay, that worked, that didn't.
Yeah.
I definitely think like eating is important before exercise because then you're tapping into those different energy systems. And I mean, there's such thing as, you know, ketosis, and so you don't know, maybe you're triggering something, or your body's going on overdrive. So you definitely want to eat before working out. I definitely think that's really important. Like, personally, that's what I do. Like, nutrition is just a big part of, you know, being an athlete and training. So I think, like I said, keeping a logbook is just really important. So you start to learn what works and what doesn't.
Great question, Rich. I hope that helped. Mandy, are you okay to hang on a little bit? We've got a few questions. Is that okay? Or do you need to shoot off?
Yeah, that's fine. I had some changes today. So that's fine.
Only if you're sure. Brilliant. Nozra, hello. Did I pronounce that right? I do apologize.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Hi. Apologies, I came late, but I'm always trying to log into these. They sound great. Mandy, thank you so much for sharing. I don't know if you've already talked about this, but obviously the way you're eating is so interesting. I'm a dietitian and a diabetes dietitian, so it just sounds fascinating. But I think what my question was is, obviously you're a team of type 1s, and do you all just eat really differently? Do they just kind of leave you to manage it yourselves, or do you get some training on this? Like, what sort of happens with your kind of education side as a team of type 1s? I mean, that in itself is fascinating that you've got that peer support, but yeah, that's my sort of question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So earlier I was mentioning too with the team, I'm not with the men's pro team. I'm kind of on my own as a track sprint cyclist. So I work a little bit with the diabetes educator on the team, and but I've really found a lot through like my own nutrition and just also my coach is my sprint coach and my weightlifting coach. He has an exercise physiology degree, and I've kind of talked to him about nutrition and just really as a sprinter, it's important to incorporate protein, and there's no one size fits all approach to diabetes and type 1. And so I've kind of just found what works for me at this level too, just what foods make me feel good, what foods don't. That's kind of like what really helped is in the beginning of it all is keeping a logbook of my blood sugars, the time, what I ate, how much insulin I took, and just started to really learn how, you know, certain foods affected me and how I felt.
Oh, thank you. No, that's great. Oh, sorry, I missed that at the start. There is a really good UK reference, and there's a guy that's called Rob, and they've got a team called X-Stod. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. But they're a great resource if anyone wants to check them out for exercise and type 1 and how to manage your sugars using food, insulin, or exercise. And they've got loads of free resources and stuff. It's fantastic. I would definitely recommend it.
Who is that? Sorry.
X-Tod, E-X-T-O-D. Great website.
Thank you. I'll have a look at that.
Link.
Oh, yes, please.
If you share the link on the hashtag, we'll retweet that out. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much. A Proud, jump on, mate.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Hi, Chris. Hi, everyone. Hi, Mandy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. And honestly, you are one of the athletes that inspire, like an inspirational for all diabetes, you know, to follow sports. And, even my son, yes, I was just showing my son your videos. Honestly, it was really amazing. I like your video because I'm a cyclist myself, but the difference because I do cycling myself as a hobby. It's like ride roads. I just go to coffee shops. I just go to restaurants and find a spot and go to that spot. And honestly, just I used to do basketball. I used to play football, but I found cycling is the most joy ever experience in terms of sports. And I have just two questions, Mandy. What kind of CGM that you use to monitor your sugar blood? And the second one, how do you...
I think we lost connection there.
Yes, I think so.
Are you there?
Tom.
Yes.
I think he, I'm not sure whether that the question was, but I think he might be asking how you connect the CGM to your phone, I think is what he's asking, but I'm not, right. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Rich. Mandy, do you want to answer the first bit and as best as you can for the second, and hopefully A-Pride will get back to us, and if not, obviously this recorded and we can shoot out to him.
Yeah, well, I'm unable to talk specifically about branding and supplies, but I wear a continuous glucose monitor that connects directly to my phone, and it's over Bluetooth.
Okay, I think most people can probably draw some inferences from that description.
Yes.
Brilliant stuff. And I guess the impact of going on to CGM and having the technology is just so fantastic to back in the day where you would have obviously finger pricked. And imagine trying to manage that now as a professional cyclist. It would just be horrendous, wouldn't it? The amount of coming off your bag to get your kit and get out of your bag, or you know what I mean? It would be, whereas like you say before, you just grab your phone and it's there, isn't it? Scan, you're done. And then you can make that informed decision, can't you?
Yeah, it's so nice. It tells you what direction your blood sugar is headed, which is so helpful.
Oh, it's amazing.
Traveling, you know, like going from, you know, one gate to the next or boarding a plane. And I'm like, you know, you might feel like you're low or high. So just having the ability to swipe on my phone from and see the widget that shows my blood sugar is just so convenient. I don't have an Apple Watch or anything. So that's like too connected for me. But I like just, you know, my phone's usually always with me. So getting to see my blood sugars when I'm traveling, when I'm training, just even about to dinner with friends, and I can just quickly take a glimpse. All that is just really just made life a lot easier and just like more convenient too. But I still will check my blood sugar at times when racing just to, you know, calibrate it or just to be double sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Rich, go for it.
No. When I do Swift indoor, I find my blood sugar levels drop really quickly. Like they go like so fast downwards. Whereas when I go for an outdoor ride, they don't go as fast. And sometimes they might even go upwards. Is that because I'm putting more power into an indoor ride than an outdoor ride from a wattage perspective?
Can't specifically say because it's, you know, what you ate too. Obviously makes like an impact of how you're feeling and how you're training and how your blood sugars are going. So, I mean, you definitely could be indoors. It's definitely depends what kind of workout you're doing. There's just so many variables without, you know, for me to give you a specific answer. But that's why I think like keeping a logbook of like your training and what you're eating and how you're feeling is going to help you, because then you can look back and say, oh, wow, this worked. This didn't. This is what I did. I'm going to try something different. So it's a lot of trial and error. You know, I say you shouldn't be fearing things. You should just, you know, be open to trying things that you're comfortable with. And you know, that's how you make those improvements, and also working with your doctor of like, this is what works and this is what doesn't.
Yeah, sure.
Alex, hello. You got a question for Mandy?
Me, Alex.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Let me think.
You're just on a panel. You just wanted to just say hi. Just say hi to Mandy. She can say hi back.
That's hi, cool. Mandy.
Hi. Where are you from?
I'm from Birmingham in the UK.
Oh, awesome. I've been to Manchester, London.
Yeah. I was in Manchester on Monday. I travel quite a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to ask, I think, I just had a look at your profile. It's all sort of like exercise. Do you do anything besides cycling, like other exercises that you enjoy doing?
I do really like Pilates, but I train often. But Pilates is just really good. It obviously always shows your weakness, no matter how strong you are.
That's true.
Yeah, and I've tried to incorporate some meditation. I talked to my sports psychologist, and yeah, just to give myself those 10 minutes in the morning, I'm trying to do that more often.
Yeah, I think it's really good. Meditation's really helpful. I find when I actually remember to do it, I'd find it very helpful, but it's always hard to schedule it in, isn't it?
Yeah, I see that you're an actor and singer. How's that being on the road for you with managing type one?
It's actually been okay, surprisingly. People are really understanding and lovely. I just tend to worry about stupid things. So it's like if I ever go to watch a piece of theatre, because I always have my phone on, I always sit there throughout the whole show, like, please don't beep, please don't beep. Because it's a massive thing that's like frowned upon in a theatre to have your phone on. So
Yeah.
I always, I'm like, well, I don't want to turn it off, but like, if it beeps, I'm gonna get in so much trouble.
Alex, on Saturday, I went to the TED Talk talking about diabetes, a conference with over 100 people with type 1 diabetes. There were people there, healthcare professionals, lots of people, diabetic dads there, Paul. And during this amazing day, there was several speakers talking about their journeys with diabetes and different aspects. So I'll send some tweets out and you can check out the videos and links when they're published. But talking about machines and the beeping and things, in this conference there were many beeping sounds going on, and it was, you know what? It was gorgeous. It was amazing because it was normal. It was incredible, and no one was looking around. Everyone, it was just incredible.
That's literally so good. I love that.
Fantastic stuff.
I saw you tweeting about it as well, and I was like, oh, I would have loved to have gone to that. So when it's on again, I'll have to try and come because that looked so good.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about it in a bit about peer support and stuff. But maybe to finish off, Mandy, because it's been a fantastic evening. Lots of questions from me, Chris, Morgan, and many people on the hashtag and on the panel there. So thank you to the guys there. Maybe just to finish, last couple of minutes, 5 minutes or so, is peer support and role model, and maybe linking into that sort of TAD talk, is what's your message, Mandy, to like people and children out there who have diabetes and want to play sports and want to live that sort of active lifestyle and want to maybe even be aspiring pro cyclists and look up to you as a role model? What sort of message would you give them? And from your point, what's your opinion on peer support, and do you connect with it, and how do you, what's your overall idea of peer support?
Yeah, so with the team, we've been for quite some time now changing diabetes. But then, with the world, the way everything is changing, our commitment and our purpose is expanding. So we're racing also to promote an active and healthy lifestyle, which I really love because there's way more to sport and type 1 diabetes. It's also nutrition and just mentally and physically as a whole, just taking kind of care more. Around just health, the conversations are there are more conversations around health and diabetes, whether that's mental or physical. And so through like sharing our stories and educating and inspiring and empowering people and engaging with a lot of people in the community, just to share our stories have been really impactful. And just to also hear from younger kids who I've met also how they've been able to overcome some things and how they've gained that independence and that ability to also just communicate with their peers and see their confidence and them just grow and light up when they talk about it. Just to be so young and so well educated in the realm of diabetes and making it fun, I think is really important. Also to make exercise fun for young kids and just so it comes a habit at an early age, just kind of similar to what I did and how my parents just got me involved at a really young age. And yeah, just from trying all the different sports from swimming, running, cycling that I was doing and triathlons to ultimately focusing and finding my passion a little bit older. So, just that exercise is also a healthy habit that people should add to their daily routine and how we can use our platforms too to create more dialogue and to end that stigma of, well, what's the good kind or bad kind of diabetes? And I always say, well, there is no good kind or bad kind because they people think, well, what's better, type 1 or type 2? So just using my platform to share that knowledge is really important. And just to have those conversations because a lot of people just simply don't know. Like I didn't know when I was diagnosed at 16. I was like, did I eat something really bad? So it kind of just starts with like simplifying it and educating and, you know, being able to share your story with people and connecting with others, like, on this platform. Like, I think it's really important and it makes me happy. It makes me feel like, you know, I'm able to do what I love while also being part of a community and helping others. And I feel like there's a greater sense of purpose to what I do. And it makes me really happy to be able to give back.
Brilliant stuff. And I guess it links into your sort of ambassador duties as well, but you're connecting with the amazing organizations and connecting with adults and children there as well.
Yeah, I definitely, at local community events here with St. Luke's that I'm partner with the local hospital. And a couple years ago before the pandemic, we did a really great pediatric event and it was so awesome. It was so cool to be amongst other athletes and young athletes with type 1 and just having those conversations, because they would say they would be embarrassed about having diabetes in class or checking their blood sugar. And then you could just see the other younger athlete or younger people also chime in and say, well, I had that happen to me too, but, you know, I just don't let that bother me because I have to take care of my diabetes because I want to be able to feel good. And I just say, yeah, when I remember checking my blood sugars in class, I would just, if they were good, like, I actually could focus better. So really you're just taking care of yourself. And for them at such a young age to realize that, and their parents to see, like, that independency and that growth that their child is making is really important. Like, to have, of course, you're overseeing them, but also letting them kind of learn what works and what doesn't. And that gives them confidence. And I've seen that. I think that's really important.
Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Morgan, I've just sent you a DM. Did you want to maybe just finish last question? Very brief it is, but about the logo. Go for it.
Yeah. Excuse me. Sorry. So what was the idea behind the logo? And I think it's amazing. I love it so much, but I kind of want to know a little bit about that.
Thanks. Oh, thanks for bringing it up too. So my logo is there's my initials MM, and I always joke that they look like my blood sugars, but they're not. And depends actually what I eat or if I didn't train that day, maybe. But it means we're greater than our highs and lows. So it looks like mountains, and it's a way also to connect with the diabetes community. So the official logo is blue, but depending on what it's on, it's white or black, but it's blue because it's the World Diabetes symbol. And I've just connected that with my initials, and we are greater than our highs and lows, because I really feel that community and that support and everything is really important. That's it, just brings in everything in that logo and connects me with more people who have type 1 and who are going through other things and not just diabetes, but that at the end of the day, like, we're all doing the best that we can. And, you know, if it's good and important to have a community of supportive people, because I wouldn't have got to where I am today without that. And I also have clothing, but I haven't been promoting it as much just because there's a lot of things going on in my life. But I do have it for sale, too, on my website. Yeah.
And I saw a tweet yesterday you put on about your jersey as well and the sort of inspiration of Leonard Thompson.
Yeah, I love this year's jersey, the 2020 jersey.
Yeah.
Leonard Thompson, the first person to receive an insulin injection in 1922. So we've definitely come a long way, and to be able to honor and represent him and tell more people about him and how far we've come is really, really incredible.
Amazing stuff, Mandy. I have loved this evening. It's been an amazing hour and 20 minutes. We really appreciate your time and coming on this evening, talking to us, sharing your journey, sharing your experiences, chatting to the guys that have come on to speak, and interacting with everyone over the hashtag and everyone just listening in as well. I've seen so many happy emojis with love hearts appearing up there. Thank you so much for coming on. It's absolutely been a pleasure. Apologies we ran over. But yeah, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Those emojis are really cool. I like that. This is maybe my second time on the Twitter platform for this, and I just think it's so neat to be able to have this platform to be able to connect. And I appreciate everyone who came in to listen. And, you know, please don't hesitate to continue to share your stories too and connect. And I think the more conversations we have, the better. So Tom and Chris and Morgan, thank you for having me and all that you're doing. I'm glad that we're connected. And the diabetes community is awesome. I've been able to meet so many incredible people. And in some ways, you know, I wish I didn't have diabetes, but I'm grateful because it's led me to many incredible people and opportunities. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things that have come out of it, too.